When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Here's a brief but annoying message to let you know that you could have first heard this episode 9 months ago if you were a subscriber to our Iron Filing Society Patreon offering.
For the price of a pint and a St. Clement's each month, you can get up to 4 episodes a week, 9 months before the rest of the world gets them. Early access to regular episodes, lots of other marvellous benefits, and there's absolutely no adverts or brief but annoying messages like this that will get right on your tics.
Find out more and subscribe now at tftimemachine.com/ironfilings.
Here we go. 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 This is it.
This is Top Flight Time Machine. I am Andy Dawson. Pow, pow, pow.
I'm Sam Nifty Delaney. So what?
It's the Keegan Hamburg Odyssey episode 3. Our second attempt at this. We had a go earlier on today, but we got sidetracked with people setting themselves on fire at barbecues, SAS barbecues, no less. And the Dark Net, Raoul Mort, and getting into a row with One Direction at the Pride of Britain Awards. It was a good 23 minutes.
Strong.
That episode is available to everyone now as titled SAS BBQ. have a listen if you want. So now we'll try again. The Keegan Odyssey. It's the ITV documentary Brian Moore meets Kevin Keegan from 1979, where Brian Moore spent 3 months allegedly with Kevin Keegan in Germany. You can get it on the ITV Hub until the 21st of June, I believe, which is a few days from now. If not, you can go on the dark net and get it, along with some weapons and hard drugs. That's basically the gist of where we got there last
time. NASA-level washer dryers.
And NASA-level washer dryers. That's as far as we got. We were just at a little bit where I was just about to mention we ran out of time last time. Kev was talking about Jean, and he says, she's never changed, never. Sometimes I get a little bit annoyed with her. I'll give her 100 quid and say, go on, get yourself some good clothes. And she'll go to the market, come back with 2 pullovers and a skirt, come back with about £92 change. Which, secretly, because as we've discovered as this has gone on, he's obsessed with money. He loves it, really. He says, that's the sort of wife I've got.
The thing is, to me, he is a sort of obsessed with money, but in a way that doesn't bother me, because he doesn't come across as overly flash. What he doesn't come across as, because I think this is the cardinal sin of anyone who's, you know, making a few quid, is smug, right?
Yeah.
Smugness is the thing. You can be rich, that's great, and you know, it's inspirational. Not only am I happy for you, I find it inspirational if someone's gone out and made a lot of money, but if they become smug about it, as if it's a bit like, well, of course, you know, there's something irritating about that, because it displays sort of hubris, where you sort of imagine that you're entitled to this wealth. And you do get that even with people who are from ordinary backgrounds. Some people, you know, as we've established, he is from a very working class background in Doncaster, miners in his family. You know, so he's, you know, he's genuine rags to riches story. But I think that he's obsessed with money, as you would be. A lot of people are. If you've been poor.
Then
of course you have your, you know, a lot, not everyone acts like this, but if you've been poor, then you are looking all the time for money making opportunities, and you don't look a gift horse in the mouth. So he is obsessed, but he's not smug.
You're always looking over your shoulder as well, because you remember times when you had nothing.
Yeah.
And you're fucking desperate and never ever go back to that.
I've had times in my life where I've earned quite a lot of money, but I've always been constantly terrified and anxious about that money. Rightly so, because I've lost all of it.
Yeah.
I was right to worry. Every time I've had it, I've lost it. Come on.
Don't mind. We've got the IFS now, haven't we? Back to all our lifestyles.
Yeah.
All good. He sends her off to the market with £100 and maybe a bag of magic beans. Who knows?
Go down the market, Gene.
Had to come back with two pullovers and a skirt, come back with about £92 change.
Listen, one of the things that I wanted to say about this, which we haven't talked about enough, we talked a lot about his bum chin, right? Which
chin bollocks.
A lot of listeners have been, got in touch to say that it was all they could focus on when he was talking.
It's hard.
It's something that I've never, when people think about Kevin Keegan, whether it's old Keegan or latter day Keegan, they talk about his hair and so on, but never about his chin. But now you sort of think his chin should have been his defining characteristic. Maybe that's why he had his hair in such an outlandish style to distract. But the thing about this documentary, what's really one of the many incredible things about it that make you think all the way through, this could never happen today. The world's most famous footballer, possibly Britain's number one, Britain and Germany's number one celebrity, irrespective of, you know, sport. It is so candid, right? And the access is so extreme and intimate. But in the main interview, there's obviously one main interview where he's done a long sit-down, right?
Yeah.
And they've done it in his sitting room at his rig in Hamburg, right?
Brian Muir appears to be the questioner.
But we don't know, because you never see him.
We don't see him.
Or hear him. But whoever it is he's talking to...
We do hear him at one point, but it might just be dubbed on from London.
Dubbed on.
I don't know.
Whoever it is, whether it's Brian or someone else, they're brilliant at interviewing, because they've managed to lull Kev into this sort of... It's almost like he's doing therapy, and this is the bit I'm building up to. The angle of the shot is just something you will never see in any other form of television, because everyone always wants the camera ideally slightly higher than them because it's more flattering, right? Kevin Keegan is slumped on the sofa in a way that I myself, it's my favoured sofa position, right?
His posture's terrible, isn't it?
Terrible posture. That's like me on the sofa. He's completely, he's sort of straight with his feet right out in front of him and his head really low down on the backrest of the sofa, right?
Mm.
And the camera is pointing upwards at him. So in the foreground, all you see is his massive bum chin.
First thing you approach, isn't it? Yeah.
And he is totally... And if you didn't know better, you would think the electric mouse was high, right? Because he looks like the sort of a cliched Stonehead. Do you remember, like, Fat Freddy? Is it called the Freak Brothers?
Yeah.
Right? It was sort of like a cartoon from the Freak Brothers, because he's slumped down. He's just saying all this sort of really amazing meandering thoughts, like, yeah, that's me done with football. I mean, things that no one ever says. That's me done with football. That's me. In 1982, he says that I have no intention or desire to continue with football. That'll be me done. And it's incredible, because they're intercutting this with a man who is at the peak of his powers and, by the way, who doesn't play like, you know, an Eric Cantona, who sort of rejected football. And even when he was at his brilliant best, he looked like a man who could take it or leave it. Keegan, when you see him on the pitch, looks like a man who lives and breathes football with every inch of his being in every second of his life, right? But he sat there going, yeah, I'll probably just quit. He goes, what I want to do is I want to captain England at the World Cup in 1982 and win the World Cup. And I want to lift the World Cup in Spain, and then say to all of my fans and the footballing world, thanks a lot for having me. That's me done.
Yeah.
And it's sort of... And you're sitting there, and he goes, in my life, he goes, that's my dream. He goes, but I'm luckier than most people in the world. He goes, because in my life, practically every dream I've had has come true. He goes, my dream was to play professionally, and I did. My dream was to play for Liverpool, and I did. My dream was to play for England, and I did. My dream was to captain England, and I did. And then I came to the Bundesliga, and I thought, well, it would be a lovely dream to win with Hamburg, but I never one moment thought it was possible. We won it twice.
But do you think he had the foresight to realise that his game was based on his phenomenal work rate and energy, and that he realised he would get to an age where that wouldn't be there anymore, or it would start to fall away? And he just thought, I'll go out at the top.
Yeah, that's why he was saying 82. So I don't know what happened. As we now know, he retired in 1984 because he had his last hurrah Newcastle.
Those last two seasons were in the second division with Newcastle.
Yeah.
So it was almost as if kind of, I'll drop down to this level where I'll still be the big fish in the little
pond. I've got one other dream. I signed for Newcastle, score 100 goals down in Epoxy Division 2, and then fly away on a helicopter.
Because, I mean, when he left Hamburg, he went to Southampton and nobody saw that coming. he's got this tendency in his life to do things that are unusual challenges that he doesn't, he confounds expectations. Do you know what I mean? He went to Hamburg. Nobody saw that coming because he was at Liverpool. They were in their pomp, winning the European Cup and all that sort of thing. Went to Hamburg. Nobody had done that before. Came back to England, went to Southampton. Southampton were a decent team. They were top six, top eight, but nobody saw that coming.
But still, you know, he's saying, I mean, these are the mad things. I know I've got a bit ahead of where you've watched it, Tony, but it's like, it's so amazing, the final bit of it that I watched today. It's like, I'm sort of buzzing about it because you can't imagine, the modern equivalent would be Cristiano Ronaldo, right? Yeah. Imagine Cristiano Ronaldo sitting there, right, and saying, him saying, yeah, I can't see myself staying at Juventus. This will be it. Whether we win the league or the European Cup or not, I'll be gone. I don't know where I'll go. But that's what he says. He's sitting there and he's just saying to Brian Moore, or whoever Brian Moore's got sat there in his place, right? His proxy. A Brian Moore proxy. Good idea for a spy book, by the way. Let's write that down. The Brian Moore proxy. Maybe it's just an episode of the Jeffrey Chichester dossiers.
Yeah.
And he goes, he goes, yeah, I mean, we could win the league again and the European Cup, but I'm gone. That's me done. I don't know where I'll go. And then he starts going, you know, Barcelona came to me at Christmas. Imagine a modern player just speaking openly like this. Barcelona came, so did an American club. One of them offered to double my wages. Another one offered to treble my wages. Then Arab club came to me. And I said to them, listen, there is no way I'm coming out there. I'm moving my gene out there, as he says, for less than £1 million a year. And they said, well, we'll be in touch then. So I don't know what's going to happen there. He's been so open. He goes, so, I mean, you know, Barcelona, America. Now, the problem is, with the only thing about going out there to the Middle East, if they pay me £1 million, great, I'd be mad not to take it. But if Ron Greenwood turns around to me and says, Kev, if you go out there playing the Middle East, that's you done with England. Well, I'll have to turn it down because I can't ever see myself not wanting to play for England. That's what he says.
Well, he kind of thought that he would still be playing for England after he went to Newcastle, didn't he? And then Bobby Robson left him out. And that was
pissed off about that, didn't it?
Yeah. So, but I'm looking at a thing about when he signed for Newcastle. It's from Laurie McMenemy's autobiography. And he says, I tried to persuade him to stay. I offered him the opportunity to be our European ambassador. He was not interested. Was it money? No. Was it something about his contract? No. He says, the decider came when he put it to me. If he was not allowed to leave, he would end his career there and then. His words, as I remember them, were, if I'm not allowed to leave, I'll hang up my boots.
And he would have done. He would have done.
Yeah, he would have done. Totally.
The main thing in this doc as well is the speed. I mean, you see him on the pitch and he's like a whirling dervish. But that's the way he lives his life as well.
It is.
And his wife, Jean, is going, well, it's actually can be a bit annoying because, you know, he's hardly ever here. And when he does turn up, he's the messiest person I've ever met. I could have that thou spick and span. And within moments of him coming home, it's like a bomb's hit it. Right, and he goes, and he never stops. I would like him to put his feet up and save all the things he's achieved, but he just can't live like that.
It's
fucking true. He is non-stop businesses, right? Personal appearances, but plays with a man the energy of a fucking 6-year-old, right? Playing in the garden, and you do think this man. Some people are born with extra energy, and the secret to their success is largely just the extra amount of energy they have. You're born with an extra dose. And he's one of them. Totally. Because you see him, he is non-stop. He's here, there and everywhere, flying around on private jets, doing all these business opportunities, never sitting down and relaxing. And then wins the league. The whole stadium at Hamburg are singing his name. Like, they love him. They think he's the best player in the world, which he probably was. And then he's there at the official fucking championship present, you know, where they all turn up on a balcony and there's about 10,000 bloody Hamburg fans.
Let's not run ahead of ourselves because we've got all that to come, right? We've got, talking about the relationship with Gene there, we're just at a bit where he says, he's talking about all this stuff that he does and he says it's hard to leave them. And then he starts talking about marriage And I think you get asked about whether it's a typical marriage that they've got. And he says, I don't know. I don't know about that. I don't talk to other people about marriage. I mean, I don't know who he talks to. You don't know who his friends are. Do you know what I mean? There's no mention of friends or anyone else outside friends. Of his
Even in the
circle.
Book, other than Terry Mack.
Terry Mack, yeah, of course.
Right. He doesn't really talk about friends much at all, does he?
No, no. He says, I don't talk to other people about marriage. I've read books. So he's read books. I don't know when he gets time to read books.
I read marriage books, obviously.
He does the books that he reads are about marriage. I don't know.
Don't get me wrong, Brian. I know how to do it. I know how to do it.
Look at me now. I'm happily married. Look. Look at
that. I learned it from the bigger lads in the playground. And then I read a couple of books. Obviously, I asked my dad about it, but he wasn't a very open man. So I had to learn for myself. And Jean, to be fair to Jean, I'll give her credit where it's due.
She had to me along now and again.
She had to give me a helping hand along the way.
She's just written some new techniques.
Now it works perfectly efficiently.
But then he says, we're like really good friends. And she looks at him. She gives him a look when he says that. What? Yeah. And then he says, we love each other.
And then he sort of giggles nervously. That reminded me of that famous interview with Prince Charles and Lady Di.
Yeah.
Well, we are in love, whatever love means.
Whatever that
like
means.
That.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But then he says a weird thing. He says, I could never get away with the things I get away with another woman who wasn't used to it.
What does that mean?
I assume it's just a surface thing, and it just means his lifestyle and, you know, everything he does. Whereby he's out of the house and he's earning all the dough. And Jane has to take care of things. She's an old-fashioned housewife.
She is. I feel a bit sorry for her because I wonder whether or not she's lonely because the house looks... It's a lovely rig they've got, but it's quite remote. It's gated.
Mm.
And they've got these dogs. I think they're called Heidi and Oliver, the two English sheepdogs, right?
Yeah.
And he goes, oh, Jane loves them. I don't know what Jane would do. I think we would have lost it without these dogs around. They're part of the family.
Jalapeño.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Jalapeño.
But Jean refers to Laura Jane, the daughter, she refers to her as her little friend, which I think is quite telling as well.
And that so she talks to.
Yeah.
What's her, she called again, Laura Jane?
Laura Jane, yeah.
What was that, Laura Jane? Do you think we should open a bottle of wine? But it's only 3 o'clock. I suppose you're right, it's Thursday, it's almost the weekend. What the hell?
Know.
Get the Liebfrau milk out.
And he's saying,
oh, I'll get it myself.
He's saying, Gene knew I was a footballer when we got married, and we've grown used to it. We used to go shopping in Liverpool and we get recognised. Then we started going shopping in Manchester and then London. And we get recognised there. And it happens in Germany now as well.
Yeah, he fucking loves it. He absolutely loves it.
Oh, of course he does. Of course he does.
And why not? You know, again, we having read the book, you wouldn't know this from watching the documentary. I mean, some people might assume because, you know, footballers, particularly in those days, all did come from quite working class backgrounds. But if we know what his background is like, and I just think, of course, you're not going to fucking sit there and look any gift horses in the mouth. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
he's having the time of his absolute life. However, it is true that you need, in order to reach a state of spiritual, you need to nurture your spirit and your soul. And in order to do that, you do need to be comfortable with doing nothing. And sometimes people who are constantly on the go, like, and he's the best example of anyone like that I've ever heard of. They do it partly as a distraction or a sticking plaster from confronting other things, pain.
Exactly. How do you switch off an electric mouse? You can't.
That's it. You cannot switch an electric mouse off.
It cannot be switched off.
He goes at one point, goes, people seem to assume, people are always telling me you got to slow down. I think people assume that one day I'm just going to drop dead. He went, he goes, Bill Shankly is the only man that I really listen to. And even he said,
Kev,
if you carry on like this, at this speed, right, and with these level of commitments to 1982, even, then you will burn out. And
you're
he said,
freak.
And I've, Bill Shankly's one man who's I've hung in his every word, but in this case, I hope it to be the first example of me proving Shanks wrong. He had no intention of slowing down.
But there's that bit there we touched on last episode where he's talking about the early 6 months at Hamburg, and he's saying about the players rejecting him and everything. He says, I'd go in, I'd say, good morning, V Gates, and they'd just turn away. I was beginning to wonder if I was speaking right, or if they were even all deaf. He says, I thought I was going to crack up. It was the only time of my life. This is quite a telling thing that he says. It was the only time of my life when I wasn't in control of everything. Oh.
The only time in his life, that comment. I mean, I think back to the Undertakers, where
he was
I
in control of
those
the corpses,
bodies.
Wasn't he?
I had all these corpses, and it was like I actually was a puppeteer of like human beings. I felt like God. Well, talking about a God complex, I'm not going to blow this now because it comes right at the end, but there are certain things he says when he's looking to the future and his future ambitions towards the end of this episode that sound like you and I have made it up for the sake of laughs, right? Let's just say his ambition knows no bounds whatsoever at this stage. He's like, but again, you can understand it. Everything he does, he keeps saying it like he can't quite believe it. He goes, everything I've ever wished for has happened. And that's why when he does talk about winning the World Cup, you can see it's such a bit sad, really, because it's 79. English clubs at this stage are dominant in Europe and have been for quite a long time, right? Yeah. Kevin Keegan's the best player in the world, and he knows that there's other great players at that point, like Trevor Brooking and Brian Robson and so on, playing in this team, right? Mm. And so he's thinking to himself, you can tell that he just is all not taking it for granted, but he thinks it's, let's say, very likely that England will win the World Cup. Because his point of view is, well, everywhere I go, I mean, I came to Hamburg, they're a mid-table side. We've won the league twice since I arrived. Everywhere I go, we end up winning. Mm-hmm. And England have got a good team. And the World Cup's in Spain, which isn't far away. So, obviously, we will win that because I will be the captain and we will win.
He probably had one eye on doing that with Southampton as well, winning trophies with Southampton when he went there. Because it was that kind of thing where they weren't the top club, but they were just in that lower tier.
So, and he wanted to drag repeat them to the glory. Same thing he did with Hamburg. Yeah, they were like exactly. British Hamburg.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe he thinks that he was responsible for Liverpool, you know, rising up in the mid-70s.
Well, he was to a large extent, wasn't he? I mean,
to some
he was.
Degree,
I know
there's more to
they
it than that, but yeah,
the, yeah.
He was a big
but
part of
he
it.
Was their he was their star man during that era, wasn't he?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. God complex. Who knows? So he was talking about wanting to fight his fellow players in training, and then there was that friendly that we mentioned last time, where you see him getting the red card, and you see the player lying on the ground.
I smashed his face in.
He's punched him twice.
I don't regret it. He was an idiot.
He does, didn't he? Yeah.
How does he get away
you
with
do that again, boy.
Yeah, you do that again, boy. Is it very much small man complex? Yeah. You know, he's like, no one's going to take the Mickey out of me just because I'm small. I'm powerful. Have you seen a powerful mouse? A powerful mouse when it loses its temper is shocking.
He's, right, he's probably, you know, because he got into football late by regular standards. And he probably thought, well, you know, I've been good enough all along to be doing this, and I've lost out on certain years where I was down in, was it Doncaster he was playing for originally?
Scunthorpe.
And he probably thinks that's probably why he's trying to grasp everything as quickly as possible, because he's making up for lost time.
Absolutely right,
and
yeah.
He knows no bounds to his, not his ambition, but his abilities and his capabilities.
Yeah.
So there's that as well.
Yeah, there's a scene where they show him training with England, which is a fascinating scene. And he goes, listen, he went, when I was back in Doncaster, right, a kid in the year below me got picked over me for the county boys team. He went, and like, who would have thought then that I would end up being captain of England? Well, I am captain of England. I mean, it's just incredible.
And that
you
boy,
go, so I'd say to anyone, anything's possible.
That boy, he was a year younger than me, and he got picked for the county team. And I'll tell you this, I have never had a proper night's sleep since that day. And do you know where he is now? Do you know where he is now? He's in jail. That's where he is. And I helped put him there. That's all I'm saying.
People say I framed him. I didn't frame him. He knew what he was doing. Did I help the police force with key pieces of evidence to convict him? Yes, I did. But that was me doing my civic duty.
Did I oil the wheels of justice in some way? Perhaps I did. But, you know, people are responsible. Every action has a reaction.
Yes. And you are always responsible as an adult for your own actions. Now, he knew what he was doing when he broke the speed limit on Doncaster High Street by a good 5 miles per hour. It was unsafe and irresponsible, and he deserves to rot in jail.
So then he's talking about that first 6 months again with Hamburg. And Gunter Netzer, who was obviously former German national midfielder, and he was the general manager at Hamburg by this point. He was the Ben Galloway to Kev's Roy Rees, almost, yeah, if you like. He says, Gunter Netzer came to me and said, and I said, I want to get away. I don't fit in with this team. And he said, what if I promised that you make it fit together with this team? What if I promise you that I make it fit together? He says, I said, you've got till the end of the season to convince me. He said, that's all I need. So he's gone to his line manager. He's gone to Gunter Netzer. And he said, I've had it. I'm off.
Yeah.
Something about Gunter Netzer. I did a little bit of research into him. So I want to know how he'd become general manager as opposed to, you know, coach or manager.
Yeah.
And according to his Wikipedia entry, after his career as a player, Netzer offered to publish Hamburg Stadium magazine.
I got a proposition for you guys.
He played for Borussia Mönchengladbach, Real Madrid. Never played for Hamburg. Had no connections with them as far as I can see. But he retired and he thought, what can I do now? Yeah, I will go and publish a magazine for Hamburg. I'll make some calls. Make it happen, yeah. So there we are. And the president of Hamburg agreed on the condition that Netzer also became general manager.
Yeah, that's just good. It's good it's deal cool. for me. Yeah. It's cool, good, okay for you, good, okay for me. Let's do it.
Yeah. But also, as well as a magazine, you'll become general manager, hey? Yeah? Okay.
You run the, how about you? Hey, how about I look at your offer. I like it. I like your ideas for the magazine. It's good. But how about we go one step further? You run the whole fucking show.
Will I still get to do the magazine? I suppose so.
You do the magazine, you buy the place, you do what the hell you want. How about that? Yeah, okay. As long as I get to do the magazine, I don't care.
Magazine come first. I do all the other stuff, you know, evenings and weekends.
The magazine has to take priority. Got big plans.
This centre spread in colour. Can you believe it?
Crossword. And get this, you ready for this? Horoscopes. Yeah, yeah. People love horoscopes, right? But they come on their matchday magazine, it's all football, football, football. People want to know what's going to happen in the future in their lives.
Get this as well. Interviews with fans, but not regular fans, celebrity fans. Actors, singers, who knows? But they're celebrities, but they're also fans. Two pages, 24 and 25 each issue.
The Englishman, the Englander. Hey, Keegan, you get him take his shirt off, take nice photos, the girls love it. Black and white, colour, doesn't matter.
So yeah, Gunter Netzer said, I'll sort it out. I'll make you fit together with his team.
Very enterprising, but he doesn't ever reveal what Netzer did. That's the interesting thing, is that basically he paints a vivid picture, which we also get in the book, about how tough it was and what bastards the Germans were to him when he arrived.
Yeah.
Because he was an outsider and they knew how much he was being paid and it fucked them all off and they were really mean to him, right?
But, really mean.
And then he goes, I had this confrontation with Gunter Netzer and he said, I'll fix it. And then they skip over the bit about how it was fixed. Next thing he goes, now everyone loves me and we'll keep winning the league. So it all turned out all right in the end.
Well, he doesn't want to give any credit to Eric Netzer or whoever or whatever the remedies were that Netzer brought in.
It was a pay rise, wasn't it, Kevin?
Them,
It was a pay rise.
House space whatsoever.
Maybe they all got pay rises. I don't know. Because if they were that bothered about the wage disparity, maybe that was the only way to fix it. Yeah. Either that, or they realised that this bloke was going to basically make them all champions. And they were players who had never before thought themselves in that category. And they thought, if we get behind this bloke, then we're all going to end up with Bundesliga medals. Yeah. You know.
I don't know if he brought in one or two other players or not. I'm not sure. I can't remember. But
in the book it said Das Kopfbomber or something like that. Do you remember?
Kochbomber.
Kochbomber. Das Kochbomber. This is a German word from Bavaria. It means the good man.
Gunnar said, I've had an idea. I'll put an ad in the magazine for new players. See if anyone wants to write in and apply for the jobs.
I will be specific about the roles that we require to improve our team. Wanted, Kochbomber. Don't worry, the German people know this word, what it means.
It's very, very
means a man
word.
Who is very, how do you say, strong. Very strong in the team. He is strong and he makes other men feel very humble in his presence.
Very insecure. Yes?
That's Kochbomber. That is what we need beside Herr Keegan, yeah? Wanted, Kochbomber.
I will put it
for
on
das
page
first
five.
Team.
I'll put it on page five. Obviously, page three, we got the naked girl. But page five, I'll put the advert for the Kochbomber. It won't just be an advert, it will be a two-page spread. And everyone will want to get involved and join in.
Here is another good idea for the magazine. Readers send in stories about awkward things that have happened to them. We call the feature Cringe. Yeah, and the people write in... They say things like, oh, I was putting on my makeup when my best friend's older brother walked in and it was very cringe, yeah? And these are the stories that people will react to very well and everyone send them in. So cringe, we do this over two pages.
Another story where a guy, he puts on his wife's tights and he likes to drive around at night, but he got stopped by the police. That's a real cringe moment.
A real cringe, yeah? So we have that is maybe we give four pages. I don't know. It depends on audience reaction. But brace yourself for a big mailbag next month. Yeah,
I really want us to now do an issue of
Guns
and
Metz's Hamburg Matchday magazine.
Yeah,
we'll do it. All done in sort of 70s typefaces and illustrations and things.
Or
yeah, I'm really up for that.
As a fanzine with letter set and photo union, because that was all they wouldn't give him any resources to do it because he was busy being general manager.
Kevin, I have dealt with your problem. Look, I have done it with the new article in this magazine. Wait, not everything can be fixed by that blessed magazine of yours, Gunter.
You say that, but I have a very high success rate so far.
Flaming at Gunter, I'm sick of hearing about it.
That's it for this one. We'll get on next time to Kev's success at making money at the autograph hours of local businesses.
Oh, yeah.
There's also, we'll be introduced to his business manager, Harry, hopefully, which is
hold
superb.
Hold tight for that, because Harry's a legend.
Please, if you've only got a few days left, I think, get a look at it on Ivy Hub before it disappears. It's on there. It's called Brian Moore Meets Kevin Keegan. Have a look.
And it's bloody brilliant.
If you can't download it, I don't know, use your phone and just video it off the screen. You've got it forever.
Come on, you're grown-ups. You can work it out.
Yeah, of course you can. Or look at the dark net. Right, that's it. Thanks for listening. Hope it's been all right. Take the FN.
All the best. Nice to see ya. Ta-da.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.